on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Roz and Emma. It's Monday, the 25th of September, and you're listening to Game On. Well, coming up today, Ireland 13, South Africa 8.
South Africa look to try and gather this one. The referee's whistle has gone. The referee has said it's a scrum. The scrum is going to be to Ireland. The referee has blown the full-time whistle at Stade de France. Saint-Denis are up. Let the message go out across France, across Europe, and across the world.
Can you imagine Michael Cochrane's closer in 5 weeks' time if we happen to win a World Cup? How epic that was, and it was only a pool game. But anyway, we'll have more on that with Stephen Ferris and Hugh Farrelly shortly. We'll talk soccer with David Connolly and Anthony Pine. While in golf, we'll hear from Solheim Cup heroine Leona Maguire.
Do it.
She's held it. Oh, magnificent from Leona Maguire. She would be disappointed with that first pitch. It sucked back to the front of the green, but then she holds it. A stunning Solheim Cup debut 2 years ago in Ohio. Oh, absolutely unbelievable stuff from Leona Maguire.
She was fantastic, that's for sure. Well, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Welcome along. I am delighted to say that Hugh Farrelly is sitting across from us. And Hugh, I'm going to put you on the spot because usually on a Monday we get our sporting highlights from the weekend.
Yeah. I hadn't heard Corky's commentary before.
There's your highlight sorted.
Incredible stuff. I think now 2 days have gone and maybe the euphoria is starting to cool slightly, but on the night, my God, it was like nothing I can remember seeing before involving Ireland, certainly in the World Cup. I was lucky enough to be there in 2011 when we beat Australia and Stephen Ferris and the rest of the monster, the Australian team, and that was an incredible night. But this felt several levels up. I mean, it was a lot of people have said this. It was a match worthy of the final, the intensity of it, the unrelenting nature of it, the drama. I mean, 13-8 wouldn't suggest, you know, a classic, but it was a classic. Now, the positives, and we focus on the positives first because we do have to bring in the caveats afterwards, but the positives are that this is the best case scenario for this team. Like, to get to this point in the tournament with no major injuries and being at this level of performance suggests that Andy Farrell's team can handle whatever the tournament throws at them, which means then you have to start thinking about how far can they go, not just how, you know, can they get the past the quarterfinal. I mean, I have not seen a team better coached, better able to cope in adversity. Things go wrong, they deal with it. South Africa throw the monsters at them, you know, they handle that and they come out the other side, and it just makes you think anything's possible.
Anything is possible. The sad point is there's no medals handed out last weekend.
I was waiting for the dollop of reality from Ruby.
That is the caveat.
All about reality, Marie.
I know you are. My highlight was Leona Maguire. We do have to do a competition in a second, but first of all, just on Leona Maguire and the fact that she just comes alive in this team element. Whatever it is about the Solheim Cup, she just is able to bring it. She's in the zone, ice in her veins. Whatever's thrown at her, she seems to be able to handle it. Clearly loves the being on a team, and Shane Larry said the same himself. He always grew up playing on teams and he loves playing in the Ryder Cup because he gets to play in a team. Leona came from that Cavan football background. Her dad coached a lot of underage teams in her club and all the rest, so she's probably used to being in on a team. But it's amazing, Ruby, and I always wonder about you and how you would have done if there was some sort of a team element to riding.
There was no I in team, but there is a me, and that always suited me best, Marie. But I think Leona Maguire flies in the face of what everyone is telling us about the momentum in the Rugby World Cup. She loses her foursome, wins her four ball. Loses her foursome, wins her four ball. Then wins her singles. I don't know, momentum to me is all about your own mental attitude, and I always put it down to confidence, being the same way. Somewhere along the way, you have to find confidence. if you're having a bad run, and it's only the ability to think in a positive manner. So, you know, I don't know about the momentum for the rugby team. I think it's all about your mental outlook and how you deal with pressure and how you're able to stay confident even and stay focused. And she was able to do that at the weekend.
Yeah, but so were the rugby team, though. And I think Kelleher is probably the best example of that, Hugh. When things were going wrong for him in the line-out, I was just watching with my hands over my face thinking, oh, my God, he's poor family now, having to look at him struggling out there. But he was able to get it together.
He had a fantastic overall game. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? He didn't let it affect him at all. People are worrying about the line-out, and you would be. I mean, it was 5 out of the first 8 that went awry. But I have a thing about the line-out. I don't see any reason for a line-out to go wrong in the professional era with lifting. I mean, without going back into the dark ages, I remember a time before lifting when it was a jumping competition and you had to have like athletes like John Eales or Neil Francis was very good for us, Robert Norster for Wales, Lennon in his day, Donal. But with lifting, anybody should be able to win ball. Elton John should win ball for you. Like, we can use Peter O'Mahony as a go-to option, and I think that's what they ended up doing. So I think they'll have 2 weeks now. They have a guy in Paul O'Connell who was, you know, one of the best at the right call at the right time and organising that, and I think they will put a lot of time into it over the next 2 weeks, and I would fully expect the lineup problems to be sorted now.
I just can't understand when it's gone wrong, why don't you go to two?
Well, that's the thing, Ruby. Like, two or four, like, just win the ball. Anything, like,
you exactly.
Some of the moves you see, like, it's like Lord of the Dance or something. Just get the thing in, and if you have the timing and the jump on the opposition, there's no reason you shouldn't win the ball. So you're dead right.
Stephen Ferris is on the line as well. Stephen, do you agree with the two lads?
Bree, do you know what? I think the lads problem solved pretty well, especially when it didn't go their way early on. But like, it's pretty difficult to find that pod when you've got two gigantic second rows going up and competing really, really well. And like, as I've always said, I said it in the show to you guys a number of times, like, a throw jump is really, really hard to beat. But South Africa were, any type of movement at all, South Africa were just taking a gamble on it and getting the lads up in the air. Moss Dart is a brilliant defensive line-out operator. And yeah, I thought, you know, with the shaky start that they had, it could have easily have all crumbled around them, and they managed to turn it around. They shortened the line out. They made sure that the South African boys couldn't put up two pods in every single line out. And of course, they grew into the game from there.
They most certainly did, Stephen. What were the negatives? There was no real negatives. It was the defence, though, was the positive. I mean, and how long can you keep defending at that level?
Yeah, well, like, South Africa had more running meters than Ireland did in the game, which we all thought it was going to be a bit of a kick battle, you know, very much an aerial between the wingers, Orensa, Colby, you know, Lowe and Mark Hansen. And yeah, there was a couple of high balls that Orensa took very, very well. But apart from that, it was just collision after collision. And interesting stat when we were on the show last night for Scotland versus Tonga, Gerry Flannery was talking about, you know, every one in every three carries Ireland were getting over the gain line. Two out of every three, they were getting driven back. Like, it was, you know, just a serious amount of defending from South Africa, but also from Ireland, because they were, you know, really on it. And, you know, the statistics would show you that Ireland probably didn't win the game, but somehow they did win the game, Ruby, and that's all that matters.
How long is it going to take them to recover, Stephen?
A couple of months. I think it's funny, like, at this stage in the competition, sometimes, you know, the lads might wake up and feel 100%. They might, you know, just get on a bike and get the blood flow going, and before you know it, you're feeling right as rain, get into a light gym session. But I think all accounts, the lads are going to try and disappear. It's more the head side of things, to be honest, Marie, than it is, you know, the physical side. Just refresh, hit the reset button, and then come back all guns blazing now for Scotland in a couple of weeks' time.
Everyone is different, but I'd be struggling with that part. I mean, if you told me I had to wait 2 weeks to play Scotland, my head would be fried. I'd much prefer to be playing them this weekend and staying in the momentum. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it's different, like, because, you know, if Ireland had a loss, it would have been a long time to stew over a match. But, you know, with that victory, it's going to be a feel-good factor. Everybody will be buzzing. Obviously, the crowd and the hype train is absolutely flying at the minute. Back home in Ireland, all the fans that were over there, the boys would have felt the vibes and the feeling from everybody there. So no, it's a good place. Like, they'll be out having a round of golf. They might have had a couple of beers in the changing room after the victory, enjoyed it, celebrated with each other's company. So no, it's a good place to be. It's a really, really good place to be. And I don't think that extra week's break makes much of a difference, Ruby, when you're off the back of three really impressive wins.
Hugh, what Andy Farrell did worked, and he got the results and the performance at times. What does he do now next day out against Scotland? Does he stick with what he tried and tested, or does anybody new get in?
I think he has to. I think the comparison I see here very strongly is with England in 2003, the only Northern Hemisphere team to win the World Cup. And I think he went with his strongest selection for the first three games, which surprised us. And I was one of those saying, is this a bit of a gamble? If you get some injuries, then you're missing for the really important games, as i.e. the knockouts. But it worked out beautifully. So now that team is locked in. I was watching the Scotland press conference after they beat Tonga, and there was a glint in Gregor Townsend's eyes. He was asked a question by Brendan O'Brien from the Irish Examiner about the Irish win, and his eyes kind of narrowed, and he said, from what I'm hearing, Ireland already through to the World Cup final. They're guaranteed to go through. And there is, Stephen mentioned the hype train. It has gone crazy. And the South Africans are kind of having a little chuckle, saying, "Okay, if we'd done our kicks, you wouldn't have won. You've won nothing yet." A lot of people are kind of looking at Ireland celebrating like they won the World Cup final and waiting for it to catch them. So I think, but that's the noise outside the squad. Within the squad, Farrell has got it right all the way along, and I think he has his settled team. They get stronger, they bed in, and they keep going.
Stephen, what do you think of that though? The hype, and it was a pool game. Ruby mentioned it after we played Michael Corcoran's commentary at the top of the program, and everyone's so excited, and it felt like a final. Like, what do we do now? Do we keep celebrating every game like it is a final?
Probably not. But I tell you what, at a few South African friends and former colleagues that I played with at Ulster, it was all congratulations, well done. And then the last sentence of their message was, by the way, you do realise it was only a pool game. And to a certain extent, they are absolutely right, not to a certain extent at all. So I think everybody just were so looking forward to this game. Like, it was just the World Cup champions against the number one team in the world, and whoever won that was more or less guaranteed to get through to a quarter final, and more than likely play against New Zealand, which is what each team would have wanted. So yeah, it just felt like there was so much riding on it, and so much more riding on it for Ireland. I think if Ireland had lost that game, the hype train would have came to an abrupt halt. The negativity, it's a typical Irish thing to do. We always rally behind everybody, but as soon as there's a bit of negative or a bad loss, then we've got no chance of winning the Rugby World Cup. So it was a really important victory, and why not celebrate it? This is Johnny Sexton's last ever Rugby World Cup. Why not walk around the pitch and enjoy what the fans are singing, and Zombie going on, and everybody making memories with their family and taking pictures. Like, everybody's sort of saying, the Irish are getting ahead of themselves. But I don't believe that for a second. And if I was in their shoes, I'd be doing exactly the same thing.
But it changes now. There's no safety wire from here. It's knockout rugby. And every time you go on that pitch, it could be the last time. Does that change the mentality, the mindset? Or is it just more the same?
I think for us, Ruby, it changes everything. I think for us looking on, and the fans, it changes an awful lot, because we've been in a similar situations in years gone by where we keep getting bundled out in the groups or the quarterfinals. So, yeah, but I just don't think it enters the lads' heads that are currently in the team. Like, they're just beating everybody in front of them this year. A serious, record, consecutive wins. They're favourites for the Rugby World Cup, and yeah, I just don't think it's entering their head that, remember 8 years ago, we got to be careful now, it's knockout rugby. I just believe that they can go out and beat anybody in front of them. And Paul O'Connell said all last week about problem solving on the hop, and you and Marie and everybody else that was watching that probably were saying, oh jeepers, no, this line out, oh no, this is horrific, and what's going to happen? But we managed to get it done, and it just fills me full of confidence for any other curveballs that are going to come our way over the next few weeks.
Hugh, it just sounds too good to be true, though. Like, just given our record, given the way teams in Ireland, teams in Rugby World Cup, things go wrong along the way, and it feels like nothing's gone wrong yet. Would you something?
Famous last words, the type that come back to haunt you. But in all our previous World Cup failures, the team imploded at some point, that they did not perform to their capabilities. You know, most famously in 07, they didn't show up at all, but 03 against France, when they got to the quarterfinal, having played really well in the pool stages, they didn't show up for the first half, and there was 37-0. It's like we freeze on the big stage. I can't see Andy Farrell's team freezing, you know. I think back to the New Zealand tour last year, when he went down there, lost the first test, and then they rallied and won it 2-1. I mean, that type of thing hasn't been done before. There's a steeliness to them that we're not used to seeing, and you know, that doesn't guarantee you getting into a first semi-final, but I think if we do go out of the quarter-final stage, it's because we've been beaten by a better team. I don't see this team not producing or performing.
Stephen, when you watched Wales and Australia last night, every time Wales got a chance, they slotted 3 points, just kept it ticking, and they had Australia out of the game before they could even get going. With Ireland now in knockout rugby, maybe not so much against Scotland, but moving forward, do they need to keep the scoreboard kicking, tipping even? Can you keep kicking to the corner? Can you keep taking the chances? Or do you just have to get ruthless now and win games?
Yeah, Ruby, I think if that was a World Cup final, Johnny might have took it 10 paces back and put it on a kicking tee and knocked it over, and you know, got the scoreboard ticking. I was listening to Stirling Mortlock on the radio last night on the way back up the road from Dublin after the Scotland Tonga game, and he was talking about scoreboard pressure and how, you know, much that has an impact on the psyche and the mentality of the opposition. And you know, as the game went on last night with the Wales Australia game, that scoreboard pressure just absolutely squeezed Australia. And it forced them into mistakes, and then it forced them from playing from deep. It changed their tactics. Granted, yes, they were, 15 or 20 points up on the scoreboard, but it was just, you know, continuous throughout the game. And, you know, Ireland, I'm sure, will find themselves in a similar situation in a quarter final. Will they kick to the corner, or will they knock it over? And to be honest, I'm not actually sure. I'm not, because it's even when Rory Best was captain a few years ago, and any time there was a penalty, it was kicked to the corner. It didn't matter who the opposition were. And Ireland were sort of the ones that started the trend. And a lot of other teams have done it as well. Even Australia last night in the first half, when they had an opportunity to kick a three, they went to the corner and obviously lost that line out. It's going to be an interesting one. But if I was on the pitch, I'd be hoping for Johnny to knock it over and take a 3 points and then hit the reset button again and you know, go back, take a restart and get out of Dodge. So, but it'll be really interesting to see what way they approach it.
Stephen, just on Australia, we know what your South African friends feel about their World Cup journey. What do your Australian friends feel about Eddie Jones?
What do they not feel? I'm just sick of looking through all the, you know, press conferences that he's done. There's so many memes out there. I think he, you know, shoots himself in the foot too many times about, you know, coming out last week and saying, I've absolutely no doubt my team's going to perform the way that's played or trained this week. You know, we're going to win the game. And it just doesn't help when his team go out and get absolutely slaughtered. And it comes across as like, you know, that his teams are really naive and they're not well coached. Like, that's the way, you know, England had come at the end of his tenure there, and obviously this young Australian side. But and then obviously the rumours of him possibly going to Japan, or he's maybe already had an interview at Japan. It's just a bit of a circus around Eddie Jones. And like, if we had a vacant position in Ireland, he would be the last person that I would want to come in, because it's just all the baggage that he brings with him. So yeah, I think every Australian fan, if he was let go tomorrow, I'd say the vast majority of them would be happy enough. But we'll wait and see how that all unfolds.
Hugh, is that an if he's let go, or is it more likely when he's let go?
He was saying in his press conference that, you know, he's committed to turning Australia. I can't see how they hold on to him. I mean, they have a Lions tour coming up. They're hosting the next World Cup. Their domestic game is in tatters. Like, and he is just... that story that Stephen referenced, the one that broke in the Sydney Morning Herald on the day of the game, that he had interviewed for the Japan job. I mean, imagine if you're playing for a coach and he's looking around to get off the sinking ship. Like, how are you going to go out and perform for him, you know? Like, it's very hard. You have to be careful these days with the amount of abuse people get on social media and stuff, but it's very hard to feel sympathy for Eddie Jones. He's the master of his own downfall in lots of ways. Dave Rennie was forced out of that job prematurely to get in this kind of instant injection of adrenaline, is what they hoped, and it's just been an utter calamity. And you can see it in the body language of the players. You can't show up not believing in your coach and expect to get results. And as Stephen referenced, they were all over the shop. They did not look like a well-coached team in any stretch, so I don't see how he holds on.
Stephen, they were all over the shop, but what about Wales? Warren Gatland seems to be bringing them to a peak through this tournament.
Yeah, again, just listening to some of the things that have come out after the game, he gave a bit of a speech to all his players in the changing room just about the hard work of, you know, that they've put in over the last 3 or 4 months. And, you know, when he took over, it was evident that the Welsh national team weren't a fit side. You know, they blew up in games, and the first thing that he had in his head was, I have to get these guys fit. I have to get them, you know, in the best physical condition that they can be. And he's done that. He obviously took them away. I think they were in Poland for a bit and putting in the hard yards. And then he's just worked off that. And are they playing a scintillating brand of rugby? No, they're not. But they're like a pack of dogs when in defence. You know, they just fly into everything. They're really good on the ground. Get numerous turnovers throughout. George North is starting to find a bit of form. Brilliant to call upon somebody like Gareth Anscombe, who's had his injury woes over the last couple of seasons when Dan Biggar went off. And yeah, they're a team that I do not believe is going to win the Rugby World Cup, but I believe they're a really difficult side to beat, and that's what Warren Gatland has made them, because they weren't that you know, previous to the World Cup, and now they're a tough side to break down.
Stephen, just on who's going to win the Rugby World Cup, and we did see Razi Erasmus and Sia Khaleesi asked about it in their post-match press conference. Do they still feel that they can win? And they had a bit of a chuckle, and they definitely still do. Do you think that South Africa can stop Ireland from winning the Rugby World Cup?
I believe they can, yeah, of course. They're just a team. It feels like, Marie, if Ireland were playing South Africa again this weekend, that'd be slightly worried, just because they're able to back it up just week in, week out at that level, where Ireland usually would be playing Italy this week or Wales at home, and not that it's a bit more of an armchair ride at times throughout the 80 minutes, where, you know, that there, the physicality that was shown, they'll have a lot of learning from it as well, no doubt. You know, they'll go into a Rugby World Cup final if they get there with a place kicker who they can rely on in Andre Pollard. They might have a specialised hooker on the bench as well. Who knows when that time comes. But, yeah, like, they can absolutely no doubt beat Ireland on their day. But as Ireland have shown, we can absolutely no doubt beat South Africa on any given day. So I'm still saying that Ireland are going to win the Rugby World Cup. And why not? Because we're the best team in the world. We've beaten the reigning World Cup champions. We're unbeaten this season. We've beaten everybody in front of us. We've went away to New Zealand and won a tour. So, yeah, and we've a fresh, healthy squad that's getting battle-hardened week in and week out. So, you know, it'd be a hard call to bet against us, put it that way.
Well, like you, Andy Farrell will also know that next week Scotland will be a different, or South Africa will be a different proposition. But going forward, does Finlay Balaam put Tadhg Furlong under a bit of pressure? Would Ian Henderson put James Ryan under a bit of pressure?
I don't think so, Ruby, no. I don't think so. I think it's pretty clear for everyone to see, not just us, but probably all eyes of world rugby on this Irish side, of what the strongest 15 are. And I think Andrew Porter is, you know, absolutely valuable, and such an important player for us, you know, 74 or 5 minutes at the weekend. And that's the thing that, you know, might shoot us in the foot, is that if we lost Andrew Porter in a World Cup quarter-final or semi-final, and next thing, you know, Sexton went down with a hamstring that has tweaked on him numerous times over the last 4 or 5 seasons, and you know, that's you need a little bit of luck, and thankfully we've had it up to this stage. But yeah, the boys are going to continue to put pressure, the likes of Henderson, the likes of Finlay Beale, they're going to continue to put pressure, but that's only just going to drive the starting 15 on and try and, you know, get an extra couple of percent out of them in every game. So for me, it's a good squad, and one that I believe can win the Rugby World Cup, and you know, we just need to stay fit and healthy for to be able to do that.
Ruby, while we're on the subject of injuries, I was reading that Antoine Dupont is getting some sort of a facial guard moulded to cover his fractured cheekbone. Did it ever happen to you?
Yeah. I got a mould for my leg one time. That kind of worked. I'm not sure, though. If you put a face mask on, I'd say he'd play without it.
Do you think?
I think he will. What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah, I think he'd play without it. I fractured my cheekbone in training, and if within a couple of weeks after surgery, I felt like I could get out there, no problem. So, yeah, I think he'll get out there, and I don't want to see him out there, mind you.
No, I know Marie is wincing here, but what's the worst that can happen? It breaks again.
Oh, lads.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's the reality.
Do you remember Harry Nordicke in 2010? He played for Biarritz against Munster with a total face guard, and he was man of the match. He was incredible.
Total face guard. I would have to look that up.
You could look it up on he's like something, I don't know, Terminator or Iron Man.
Iron Man or something.
Yeah. Like Gladiator, isn't it? Yeah, it's like Gladiator kind of. Yeah.
Just on the subject of Munster, Hugh, it's been announced today that Graham Rowntree has signed a 2-year contract extension, so he's going to be at the Province until at least 2026. Very positive to see that continuity, I'd imagine.
100%. I was one of the early critics of the Johan van Graan regime. I thought there was too much of a South African influence in Munster at the time, most typified by that barbecue incident when there was 6 of them around. But I think Rowntree came in with a breath of fresh air, and just coming from talking to people at the club scene in Cork and at the grassroots level in Munster, they feel they can identify with Munster again. They see local young fellas getting picked. They're more prepared to go up the road and watch a game in Limerick. That had gone when the team was largely full of, you know, South Africans and, you know, maybe players from the other provinces. And now there is a strong identity again. And Rowntree, he's a lovely way about him. He's a character that people can identify with. And he plays a much better brand of rugby. And to end the trophy drought after, what was it, 12 years? I mean, onwards and upwards.
His first season as well. Hugh Farley, assistant editor, sports editor with the Irish Daily Mail. Thank you so much. And Stephen Ferris, former rugby player, thanks as well for joining us. Hopefully we'll be talking to you, Stephen, a lot over the next, 4 or 5 weeks to go?
It's more.
Nope. He's gone now, so it's more than that. Is it how many, Hugh, is it? How many weeks do we get to final? End of October, wow.
5 weeks, guys. Five weeks.
Yeah, thanks for that, Ruby. Hugh, thank you for coming in. Just before we take a break, we're going to hear from Leona Maguire. So she was that driving force over the weekend as Europe retained the Solheim Cup. And yesterday she spoke with Greg Allen.
Leona Maguire, a Solheim Cup hero for a second time. What was this like today? Because this was every bit as special as your contribution to the win 2 years ago, surely.
Yeah, I think it's special in a different way. I think there was a lot of expectations going into this week of to live up to what happened last time, but just an incredible week. I think the support was phenomenal this week from all the Irish fans that were out there, and really gave me the energy to go all 5 matches.
You won 3 points. You played so well. I mean, you were 6 under today, you were 7 under yesterday. Personally, how satisfying was that?
Yeah, I felt like I played some really great golf. Pulled off some shots when I really needed to, when the team needed me to, and it's hard to get even a half a point in these matches, let alone a full point. So I don't know if I'll ever do it again, what I did in Inverness, but very proud of the entire team this week and happy to have played a part in it.
After Friday morning's foursome session, to come back and draw the match 14 points apiece, which means that Europe retained the trophy, what was going on in that team room that engendered that comeback?
Yeah, I think we have a team of fighters. I don't think we weren't worried. Obviously, it was a big mountain to climb, but we knew we had the games to pull it off, and I think that Friday afternoon, the fight that we showed was really important and kind of got back into it.
that singles today. You're playing Rose Zhang, who was the greatest amateur we've heard of, and before her, you were the greatest amateur we'd heard of. It was sort of a clash of the titans, and you took control, and boy, did you win that match in style with that 14th green 20-yard putt.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have a lot of respect for Rose, everything that she's achieved in the amateur game, but I didn't believe in the hype when I was amateur number one for that record, so there was no reason to be starstruck or any, give her any more than she was due, and I knew I'd have to play some really great golf today to come out on top, and yeah, I brought it today.
Is there emotion there? Because we don't see that, you know, too much from you behind those glasses.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this is a special week. It brings, I think, something a little different out in everybody. And yeah, it was really cool on 15 green when I finished today with all the fans and all the. I think there was nearly more Irish people here than there was in Dromoland a few weeks ago. So it was really special.
Just finally, you were in 2011 when the Solheim Cup was in Ireland. You were on the junior Solheim Cup team. What would it mean to you to have a Solheim Cup in Ireland and do what Carlisle Shiganda did today and, you know, hold the winning putt or be part of that?
Yeah, I mean, look, what Carlotta did was fairy tale stuff today, but we've had one Solheim. If we could have another one, fantastic, but every single one I've been a part of has been incredibly special, and no matter where they are in the world, hopefully I get to be a part of it. And I know there's a few Irish golf clubs that are interested in hosting, and hopefully they've seen what's happened in these last two, and it maybe is a little bit extra incentive for them.
Brilliant Solheim Cup performance. Go to those celebrations because I'm keeping you from them. Well done.
Thank you.
Game on 2FM.
So I think we should go back to the top of the show, Marie, and maybe do the competition we were supposed to do before we did the rugby.
We're so good
we?
At our jobs.
I know, we're just unbelievable. We're definitely stuck on Game On, aren't we?
Yeah, do you have a
right.
competition?
Right, I'll try and read the script. Now, if you'd like to join the club and experience the world's game on another level, then listen closely. This Friday, September 29th, EA Sports FC launches the highly anticipated FC 24.
Yes, EA Sports FC 24 will showcase the best players from the biggest clubs, leagues and competitions around the globe in both the men's and women's game for ultimate inclusion and authenticity in game. EA Sports FC 24 launches across PlayStation 5, 4, Xbox, PC and Switch. And to celebrate, we've a copy of EA Sports FC 24 to give away every day this week thanks to EA Sports.
To be in with a chance to win, all you have to do is answer the following question. Which Premier League team scored 8 goals yesterday? Text your answer, name, email address and county to 51552. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for more.
I know the answer to that one, and we might be talking about it in a little while if everybody stays tuned. We are going to start our football chat though with the women's national team, because they began their post Vera Powell era with a win over Northern Ireland on Saturday, the very first appearance in the Viva Stadium. It was quite an emotional moment, I have to say, seeing the Ireland team lining up there for the anthem for the very first time after so many years of not getting the opportunity to play there. I really enjoyed it, and it felt like a big one. Anthony Pine is with me in studio. We'll be talking to David Connolly as well in just a moment. But Anthony, you were there too. It felt like a big deal, and they got the win.
It felt like a big deal. It was a big deal. It was a great sense of occasion and celebration in a few ways. I mean, I think every player who'd ever represented an Ireland women's team had been offered 2 free tickets by the FAI as part of their 50th anniversary celebrations of the Republic of Ireland women's team. And there was great colour and noise, and then they went out and they got a 3-0 win. And I think it was important for two reasons, really, Marie. I mean, obviously, to start the UEFA Nations League campaign with 3 points was important against Northern Ireland. That feeds directly into Euros qualification next spring. So if Ireland do well in this, if they win their group, it will really help their seeding and improve their chances of at least getting a playoff spot for the Euros. But I think even more than that, with the year that they've had, you know, every landmark they've achieved, you know, the playoff win, to get to the World Cup, to reaching the World Cup, preparing for the World Cup, getting there and playing in that tournament, it was soured in some way. You know, when they won in Scotland, there was the celebrations in the dressing room afterwards, which, you know, there was controversy over that, which sort of went on for a few weeks. Then the allegations against Vera Powell and the NWSL report sort of hung over the team for a long time. And then when they actually got there and drew at Nigeria to get their first ever point at a World Cup, you know, there was the touchline spat between Katie McCabe and Vera Powell, which overshadowed that. And then there was the sort of drawn out departure of Vera Powell. So for them to actually start a new era and a new beginning with it, with a good performance, 3-0 win, 3 points, and for the players to be able to just enjoy that moment, I think was important for them.
It kind of proves there's no such thing as bad publicity, because 35,944 turned up at the Aviva for an Ireland soccer's women's game. Did you ever think you'd see that day, Anthony?
Well, look, I mean, if people involved in the women's game, Eileen Gleeson, for one, who's the interim manager, a lot longer than me, will have talked about that all week, and what a remarkable achievement it is for this team. You know, it also proves, Ruby, that it's example number 1 million, that social media is not real life, because there's been an awful lot of criticism leveled at those players in the run-up to this game. An awful lot of negativity, obviously, in the wake of Diane Caldwell's very strong remarks about Vera Powell. But Marie, you know, I'm sure you'll agree that inside the stadium, it's just overwhelmingly positive. You know, every player's name was cheered to the rafters. The lap of honour at the end was really great. And, you know, the demographic for these games as well is... there's an awful lot of kids, families. There's just a really good vibe going to watch Ireland, even at Tala. And it was Tala times 10, wasn't it? Or times 5, anyway, on Saturday at Aviva. It was just a nice day, a good occasion, and, as I said, a good win for them.
I'm laughing here at the thoughts of the social media thing. I keep telling Marie there's no future in reading that stuff.
Music to Ruby's ears now, saying that social media isn't real life. But you are right, though. The atmosphere was unbelievable. Like, there was no sense that there was any negativity around this team whatsoever. Even the way the fans stayed at the end, like, usually they just pour out the Aviva the minute the final whistle is. But because they do have that connection, like, you know, and I know we kind of scoff at it at times, you know, that players sticking around to sign autographs and all the rest, but they've done it for so long now. So many of those fans feel like they know those players as well because of the time that they've given, and they're getting it now in payback because they're turning out in droves to go and support this team. It was great for them to win, but I have to say the opposition didn't put up much of a test.
No, well, look, we should qualify it by saying that, because Northern Ireland, you know, they've a lot of part-time players. Obviously, the Republic of Ireland now, most of the squad are in professional environments. I thought Northern Ireland did okay, but you know, they tired. They clearly tired after the hour mark. You always felt once Ireland got the first goal, they never really looked in danger of giving that up. And obviously Ireland, to prepare for the World Cup, they played China, they played the USA twice, they played France. These are all teams in the top 15 in the world. So there's a real gulf then. When you go outside the top sort of 30 in the world, Northern Ireland are ranked 47th. There is quite a gulf there, and I think I don't think Ireland did anything radically different on Saturday in terms of any tactical changes or anything. It's just they had much more of the ball because they were playing weaker opposition, and when that happens, your two wide players, which in this case was Heather Payne and Katie McCabe, they just naturally can get further higher up the pitch. She pushed Lucy Quinn up beside Kira Caruso, so she had two up front, and the back three of Caldwell, Louise Quinn and the debutant Caitlin Hazel was really good. They were very comfortable, and it just meant that Ireland were really always in control without playing outstandingly well, but they were definitely the better side.
So would you have liked to have seen them create more opportunities? I mean, their three goals came from two corner kicks and a present from Turner. So do you think they could have created more, or maybe had more goal scoring opportunities from play rather than set pieces?
Well, this is the challenge, Ruby, that whoever comes in to succeed Vera Powell on a permanent basis, because Eileen Gleeson is obviously, she's there potentially for the rest of the UEFA Nations League campaign. The FAI's director of football, Mark Canham, did suggest that there is a chance that she could stay there until December. The last game is against Northern Ireland in December in Belfast. So they're buying themselves a bit of time to get someone to come in and succeed Vera Powell. But, you know, the big challenge is to get the right person to progress this team even further, because, you know, the noises from the players are that they feel that they can be a little more expansive. You know, we looked at Ireland in the World Cup. They did really well. They equipped themselves very well. They were competitive in every game in a very tough group. You know, Australia, Nigeria and Canada, three really top teams. But to take that next step and sort of move away from just playing a low block and make frustrating teams and you know, not really trying to own the ball, that's a difficult step to make. And it will take a little time for Ireland to make that transition, I think. I don't think they were particularly fluid expansive on Saturday. But, you know, then again, you know, it was a big occasion for the players too. They were probably a little bit nervous. 36,000 fans, first game back in international camp. You know, there, a lot of them are actually still even in pre-season. You know, the league actually hasn't started for a lot of the English-based players. So you do have to factor in all of that. Really, we'll only be able to judge this, I would say, in 2 years' time, whether they can make this evolution. And a lot depends on who takes the reins, and that decision is with the FAI now. And it's a huge decision to get that appointment right, because there's so much potential within the group. But obviously the standards and the expectations are higher now than they ever have been before.
Well, we'll probably find out a little bit more tomorrow as well, because they play again against Hungary in the Nations League, and it is live here on 2FM, covered from 6 o'clock. So do tune in. David Connolly joins us now on the line. Dave, we're going to talk about the Premier League in just a moment, but first on that connection that this women's team have with the fans. When you're playing for Ireland, can you sense when things are going well with the fans and when they're maybe a little bit fed up with you?
Well, I'm sure when I missed the penalty they were fed up with me, that's for sure. But I think it's great, and they should be playing at the Aviva, you know, and Palace have done well. But I mean, a wonderful occasion, brilliant. Maybe the kickoff time, you might say, you know, was it the best kickoff time? Would they have got more fans if it was a bit late in the afternoon? I don't know, because, you know, mornings are always, you know, kids have got football on, they've got this, that and the other, they've got, you know, Gaelic on or whatever bits and pieces that you do. So, do you know what? I think there's a lot of fans, but I think there's obviously potential to have more. You know, that's for sure. So, you know, great occasion.
David Connolly putting his hand up for head of marketing and PR at the FAI. Strategic review.
David, let's move to the Premier League now, and I think we probably do need to start with Spurs and Ange Postecoglou and the job that he's doing there and the challenge that they put up to Arsenal, and just even what a super entertaining game we had at the Emirates yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant, wasn't it? I mean, I think Ange had a lot of really good publicity in the week. You know, he comes across as such a likeable guy, very empathetic. I think the fans love him, the players love him, but you're thinking, right, this is his first big test, really. I mean, they beat Man United, but I guess United have started the season so badly. This was the real acid test. And I think to come away with something like they did with a point, and, you know, they were, you know, played more than their role in this game. They were excellent as well. And it was a great game. So I think for Ange, it is really good, because that was a big test. You know, Arsenal at the Emirates is a tough task, you know, and how they're playing. And they went behind twice, and they came back. So I thought they were fantastic.
And it was both all down to Romero. I mean, he stuck his leg out for the own goal. He gave away the penalty. And Spurs still managed to get two. Like, were they not a bit unlucky?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's a few things they did wrong. I've got to be honest. You look at that goal, right? And if you analyse it, Brennan Johnson, you know, completely overcovers with Ben White. They could have defended Saka a lot better in that instance. You know, there's a few little bits, other bits and pieces, but you would say what they've got in their favour now is, you know, you've got someone like James Maddison. He could have gone backwards. He could have played safe for Son's goal, but instead he drove into the box, took a risk, you know, and I guess that's the confidence that they're playing with, and I guess Ange's instilled that in them, right? Maybe under Mourinho, maybe under Conte, they might have played safe, or they wouldn't even have a player like James Maddison. So I think, you know, although they've got no Kane, the signs are really, really bright. Defensively, yeah, a couple of things they could have done better, but all in all, I think it looks like exciting times, that's for sure. They've got a tough game next. I think have they got Liverpool next away, so it doesn't get any tougher.
Yeah, they have Liverpool away, and Liverpool are absolutely flying. 3-1 again at the weekend, and they beat West Ham. They've won their last five. And Nunez, I can see why Stephen Kelly finds him a little frustrating. He missed a sitter and then scored a beauty.
Oh, yeah. The goal was great. I mean, you know, credit to the good. I mean, because Quiven did brilliantly in the week, right, in Europe. And then he changed it back to Alisson. Alisson made a great save from Thomas Suchek at 0-0. And then he made sort of another one at the start of the second half. He got down, and you're sort of thinking, well, I tell you what, West Ham are in this game. But, you know, the power, they turned on the power a little bit, scored a great goal, a brilliant goal, wasn't it, on the volley. Sort of difficult skill that is, ball dropping over your shoulder, really difficult. So great result for them. They've started brilliantly. I mean, I tipped them at the start to run Man City close, and I stand by that. I think they're going to be there or thereabouts. They still give you a chance. You know, they still give you a chance. Like, Antonio should have done better, and a couple of other things. Bowen's goal. You know, you think defensively, you know, you're going to get chances against them. But, you know, Mo Salah, fantastic form. They're going to score goals. I think they're going to be tough to stop because I think they're going to improve. They will improve from here as well, Liverpool, that's for sure.
Yeah, but their next three games are vital. Spurs away, Brighton away, and then they have the Merseyside derby against Everton.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, look, defensively they will be tested, but I think they'll tighten up. I do, you know. They showed sort of against LASK, they made a few changes, the subs come on, had a real impact. Make no mistake, the big players are important for them, but, you know, they're going to score goals. The signings look really good, you know, Szoboszlai, McAllister. I think they've really added an awful lot to that team. So, exciting times for Liverpool, yeah, that's for sure.
What about, Anthony Pine is still with us here in studio. What about Evan Ferguson, Anthony? Yesterday he got taken off at half-time. He did get that start. It doesn't feel like he's right. Yes, they lost 3-1 to Bournemouth. Sorry, they won 3-1 against Bournemouth.
Yeah, well, he was ill, wasn't he, during the week? He missed the Europa League game you know, you just have to trust that they're looking after him. He's 18, you know, he's so young that even if he was 100% and they feel that there's certain games that are going to take him out of the firing line, that might happen throughout. They've been really patient with him as well, Marie, and like that's the other thing. He's exploded onto the scene, and the temptation with a player like that is to play him a lot, which happened, for example, with Michael Owen years ago at Liverpool. They just kept on playing him because, you know, young players like that, they want to play all the time. Mm-hmm. They feel invincible. And that, you know, Brighton have been disciplined in how they use Evan Ferguson. But, you know, the thing with Brighton as well is that they are an exceptionally well-rounded team. They're not leaning on Evan Ferguson. He is, you know, clearly their number nine, you know, for the next, I think, is the contract for the next 4 or 5 years. So, now he's the guy that they can shape their attack around. But right now, they don't have to do that because they have so many players that can contribute to that team offensively, and they're just so well drilled and they're so great to watch. I know they slipped up in Europe during the week, but you know they're not going anywhere. They've had a brilliant start to the season, and I know you referenced and David and Ruby chatted about Liverpool's next three games. I mean, what is the most difficult game there? Spurs away or Brighton away? It's actually hard to say because although, you know, Spurs have made a great start under Big Ange, Brighton have established themselves over the last couple of years as a brilliant.
Yeah, they're a big team now as well.
They really do feel like they've kind of broken into the top six anyway, yeah. And it's like an established top six team, or they're well on their way to doing that. In terms of Evan Ferguson and how they're using him, I think it's a good thing. I actually think it's a good thing for Ireland. You know, they use him well, they're disciplined with him, and you know he's in the right place.
David, obviously United have had a ropey start. We'll get to them in a second, but not as bad a start as Chelsea. And they got stuffed again at the weekend. Villa beat them 1-0, players sent off. Yeah. I mean, what's going wrong there with all the billions they spent?
Well, I tell you what, Ruby, they had enough chances to score. You know, they could have easily been up. Jackson had a good chance. Raheem Sterling had another one. I thought the goalkeeper, Emi Martinez, you know, the World Cup winner, I thought he was brilliant. You know, like him or not, with his antics, he's a really good goalkeeper. He made a couple of great saves. And, you know, even Chilwell at the end had a really good chance and they didn't take it. Martinez made another good save. So I think Villa are in for a really good season, Ruby, because I saw a lot of their games in America pre-season. They were brilliant. They were really, really good. And on paper, that shouldn't be a surprise, that result, even with the money Chelsea have spent, because Villa got a top coach. They've got a really good team. They've taken the pre-season form into the season. And, you know, that result, I don't think, would have surprised many people. I really don't. You don't take your chances, it's going to cost you. But, you know, you got to say, Emi Martinez was, I thought he was magnificent.
He certainly was. What about United then? Fernandes beating Burnley 1-0. Is that really steadying the ship?
Well, what a goal. I mean, what a goal. The technique on that. But I've got to say, I'm a bit, I'm probably a bit being, giving a lot of praise to a former teammate of mine, but the pass from Johnny Evans, Ruby, was absolutely out of this world, right? Johnny is a right footer, yeah? He's a right footer, and he has played left centre back probably his whole career, near enough. And his left foot, there's probably like two footed players like that. One other springs to mind who's as good as Johnny, and that's John Terry, with his left foot, able to play a diagonal 60, 70 yards drop it on onto someone. You know, there's not too many that can do that. And Johnny's gone under the radar, you know, because I know he's come back and he's an older player and this, that and the other, but, you know, he's a top pro, great lad, and the pass to Fernandez is absolutely fantastic. Make no mistake, that is a skill from, and you would know, hours and hours of practice that, to put on a play, and then the finish is just fabulous. But they were lucky. Burnley should have scored a couple of times, and not a great start from United, a bit like the Wolves game. They scraped the 1-0 due to a brilliant goal.
I had a good row yesterday with Alan Colley about whether or not Pochettino was under pressure with Chelsea. Do you think he's under any pressure at all, or will he just get as much time as he needs to try and get a few Premier League points, because he's not doing a good job of it yet?
Well, okay, he's done a couple of things, Marie, that really surprised me. You know, now, look, I know from when I left Southampton, he took over, and the lads told me he would work them to the bone. And I have a feeling he's obviously working them really hard in training. They've picked up an awful lot of injuries. And, you know, you just think, right, the other day, despite, like Ruby says, all the money they spent, they had a bench full of kids. And he's made Conor Gallagher captain. And you think, well, Conor Gallagher was out of the club last season and started this. So, look, there's a few things I think he's still finding his feet there. I think he will get time, but I tell you what, at the minute, the confidence looks so low, Marie, that you can't see a result coming for them. That would be the worry.
No, you most certainly can't. Everton got a good result when they beat Brentford 3-1, but Man City, it just rolls on. 6 games, 6 wins, Haaland and Foden, or Foden and Haaland, whichever way you want to put it. You think Liverpool are going to give them a run. Stephen Kelly doesn't. Alan Colley agrees with you. In a minute, explain why.
Well, why Liverpool or why Man City? Well, look, Man City, like they were even if they don't have, say, Haaland scoring like he didn't against Red Star, he hit the bar of the header. This week, bang, he puts it in the back of the net. Alvarez scored last week, doesn't score this week. I mean, look, they've got a fantastic sort of squad. It's incredible. The first goal from Foden, what a pass from Rodri, set from Walker, back of the net. I mean, look, they are going to be hard to stop. But of all the teams, though, I think Liverpool... Yeah, you know, Arsenal won't be far behind, but I just fancy Liverpool that they're going to be there or thereabouts. But can I see anyone stopping City? Honestly, probably not. But I think Liverpool will run them close. Really good win for them. Scored a couple of really good goals, and even down to 10 men, they never looked in trouble. And probably now, will Calvin Phillips get a chance? Yeah, probably. If he doesn't play now, he might as well. Now, he's just wasting his career away, isn't he? You know, surely he'll get a chance now. We'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. David Connolly, thanks a million.
Thanks, David.
No worries, take care.
And thanks, Anthony Pine, as well. Before we finish up, we do have a winner of our EA Sports FC 24 competition. And today's winner is Eamon Cunningham from County Waterford, who gave us the correct answer of Newcastle as the Premier League team that scored 8 goals yesterday. There'll be another chance to win tomorrow, and there'll also be live coverage of that Hungary Republic of Ireland game in the Nations League. So do tune in. That is all we have time for. Bette De Silva's up next. RTE 2FM.